Welcome to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast, where we help you in the LGBTQ plus community find a safe and affordable retirement place. Join Mark Goldstein as he interviews others who live in gay-friendly places around the globe. Learn about the climate, cost of living, healthcare, crime and safety, and more. Now, here's your host, Mark Goldstein.
Today, we're going to point the dart at Mexico City, Mexico. We have our guests, Zach Campbell and John Rogers. Tell you a little bit about each. Zach is a chef, a wedding and event planner, former interior designer, and a lover of living life out loud. He's produced upward of 350 weddings and events worldwide. He's had the privilege to cook for rock stars, royals, and regular Joes and Janes. He lived in seven countries, including Texas. Texas is definitely a country. He's 53 years old and has moved 30 to 34 different addresses. That's pretty impressive. All right, Zach, and we'll tell you a little bit about John. So John was born in Bogota, Colombia. After 1 year, his family and he moved to Denver. He went to University of Colorado at Boulder and was a finance major. He then moved to Dallas, where he was a bank examiner for 2 years. He went to law school at the University of Texas in Austin. He was a Federal Reserve Bank examiner and assistant city attorney in Dallas, doing zoning and urban planning. He retired in 2014. He took some odd jobs as a flight attendant for Southwest Airlines. He worked at World Market, LA Fitness Gym, and his doctor's office. And he moved in June of 22. And you guys have been together for four and a half years?
Yes.
4.5 years. Okay. And now they're living in Mexico City. So, gentlemen, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Sure. Tell us a little bit about your story, how you got to Mexico City from Texas, and just give us a little background on that.
So I'll go ahead and start since I was the Mexico City catalyst. I had lived in Mexico before moving to Dallas. I had lived in Puerto Vallarta for almost 10 years, had a business there. And then when the financial crisis happened in 2008, it kind of kicked our butts and I needed to move back to the U.S. and kept the business until 2011, which I then sold and moved to Texas. Never having been there, went for the summer and stayed 12 years. Culturally, it wasn't really a fit for me. Business-wise, it was great. So it was a constant challenge to stay or leave. I married a Texan, divorced a Texan, and then I met John. and at that point, I wanted to leave Texas and was thinking of Los Angeles. My family is in the television business and wanted to be closer to them as well as professionally. It was a great location for me to be in as a private chef, but also was open to other places, and Mexico City was option number two. I decided, and then John and I talked about it. He was not keen on LA. I think he actually would have moved there. He says he wouldn't, but I think he would have. But we decided that Mexico City was actually a place that really resonated with both of us. The bonus being that my mother also lives in Mexico City. She's been here for about 10 years. She had previously lived in Vallarta. So it was a nice move to be near family. And that's how we got here, just after COVID.
Excellent.
I have a comment about LA. The reason I didn't really like LA is that it's such a car-centric city and I don't like driving. And I spent my entire career at the city trying to make a city more walkable and supporting mass transit and stuff like that. And I just felt like that moving to LA would be some kind of punishment of moving to a city where you have to drive everywhere. Mexico City, on the other hand, is very, very walkable. And I don't have a car here and I don't drive here, which is perfectly fine with me.
You're a man of my own heart. I hate driving. I was born and raised in New York City. Therefore, I took the subways, buses, mass transportation everywhere. And then all of a sudden, well, from New York City area, I moved to Florida. And then that was a shock, because then it's like, oh, now I got to drive. I have no choice. So I had to drive there. And now I live in Phoenix. You still need a car to get around. But again, I do not like driving. My husband does most of the driving. So, except for right now.
Zach does all the driving.
Zach.
And I learned how to drive in Tokyo and Hong Kong. So for me, Mexico City is a perfectly sane place. And it all makes kind of sense. It is, I have to say, it is not for the faint of heart. That is for sure. And we don't own a car here. Whenever we need one, we just rent one for weekend trips, or we fly everywhere we go. So you don't really need one. I do. I love driving and I miss it, but I don't miss having to drive.
Right.
I miss the actual joy of driving, but not the requirement of a California or a Phoenix or Texas, for that matter. Really, you need a car to get anywhere and do anything. So,
yeah, I never had that joy. That joy just didn't work with me. I'm neither probably same with you, John.
Yes.
All right. So tell us a little bit about the climate of Mexico City and the geography. Where is Mexico City located within Mexico?
John, you're the geographical guy. You talk about that.
It's further south, and it's in the center of the country. I can't really describe how it is, where it is in relation to other stuff exactly, but
so how far
south,
is it from the
south
beach?
Central. So it's kind of evenly spaced, 3 hours to the Gulf and 3 hours to the Pacific. So it's nicely located for that. You can get to, and there's also great beaches like south of Oaxaca too, which is also the Pacific. So there's like three different sets of beaches you can get to pretty quickly from here. So the climate in Mexico City is absolutely perfect. It year round, it fluctuates between about 60 degrees and 80 degrees. And 80 degrees is a super hot day here. People will start losing their minds when it gets that hot. It's usually, like today, it's going to be about 72 degrees in the middle of summer. In contrast, like Dallas today is probably going to be about 105 degrees. So it's really, really nice. There's a season with the current season now running from about June until September or October is the rainy season. And it does rain every single afternoon for about an hour. It kind of reminds me of Hawaii in that sense. But the rain cleans the air and cools things down and keeps it really pleasant here. And the very lush plants here, like anything in the world, will grow here. So we've got the whole gamut from like cactus to agaves to palm trees to oak trees. It's everything. It's just beautiful and lush.
So it's not humid like Florida humid?
No, not at all. Probably less humid.
How about mosquitoes? Do you get mosquitoes?
No, not really.
I mean, you do get some. It really depends on where you live. If you're near like a park, you're probably going to get a little bit more. We're on the 24th floor and we occasionally will get mosquitoes, but not very often. And that's only usually during rainy season, but it's not a problem like in other parts. You're not dealing with tropical issues here. Most people assume Mexico City is tropical because it's Mexico, and it's not. We're at 7,200 feet. The weather is very temperate.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah, we're very high. The only thing that I would say is a slight concern for some people is if you have upper respiratory issues, which I do, they can be triggered. The pollution here, especially in the dry season, can be pretty intense. This past year especially, I knew a lot of people from my group chats and things that were complaining about getting upper respiratory infections and things. But you clean the air in your house and otherwise it's good. And then the minute the summer season starts, the first after the first rain, like the city's cleaned. You can literally just see it. You can see the dust and stuff that is just removed from tops of buildings and things. It's so it's lovely. I love rainy season here. It's just, it's beautiful. It's really, really pretty.
The other factor with Mexico City is that it's, the elevation is very high, 7,500 feet. So in contrast, like Denver, Colorado is 5,000 feet, plus or minus a little. So people who, if you're sensitive to high altitude, Mexico City might be a little bit of a problem for you. And when people move here, it takes you like the first 3 months to get used to the altitude so that you're not like winded every time you walk up a flight of stairs and stuff. But you do get used to it eventually.
It sounds like Santa Fe.
I was going to say similar. It's just like Santa Fe in that respect. It's just like Santa Fe, and like Santa Fe, there are oxygen bars. So if you need to go to an oxygen bar, which when we first moved here, I would do every few weeks. You just go in for a 30-minute hit, and you come out, and you're good as rain. So good to go. So yeah.
Who knew? Cool. All right. So how about, is Mexico City, is it very LGBTQ friendly? Is living?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
completely. So here's a great story. So we moved here June 7 of 2022, which was June 7 is my birthday. And 3 weeks later, on June like 24th, they had the gay pride parade, which was huge, like millions, literally millions of people came to that parade. And so we went to the parade with some friends of ours, and we, through their connections, they are friends with a woman, a transgender activist woman who owns a bar here. And she had the lead float in the parade, and we were invited to get up on the float. So we had only been here for 3 weeks, and we ended up on the lead float of the gay pride parade in Mexico City with millions of people.
And you're like,
I couldn't believe it. Yeah.
That's so funny. That's
great.
It
was great.
What was really cool, just to add to what John was saying, what's really cool about that experience was, unlike pride parades in the U.S. that are very performance oriented, this is much more politically oriented. And that specific year, it was the first year, I think there was 1.25 million is the number that I remember or recall reading.
Wow.
But the crowd is totally different. It was young, it was families with their kids and grandmas and like everybody. And it was really, really cool because as we were on this, it was actually a double-decker bus in it with an open top. And there was some pop star who I didn't even know who they were. And I was like getting in their way. And so people couldn't figure out who we were and why we were on this float. Like, who are these guys? Like, what? And we don't know. We're just like waving to the crowd. It was fun. But what I was really left with was the welcome, like just how welcoming and accepting it is here. And I really paid attention. I'll frequently work outside at a cafe or whatever, and I'll see a gay couple walking down the street, and I would look at other folks and see if there's any reactions.
None.
Zero reaction. The only guy I've seen, one person who was a shoeshine dude, like across the street from our house, and he saw two very, very effeminate young men holding hands walking down the street together. And he kind of gave this snarly look. And I looked at him and I was like, what's your deal, dude? And he was like, oh, sorry. But that's really the only time I've ever seen it. You see lesbian couples. There's tons of trans folks here. There's many. We live in a neighborhood that is definitely a mixed neighborhood. We're near the gayborhood. It's about it's one neighborhood over from where we're currently living and right across the street from where we're moving. It's like not a thing. Like John and I will kiss each other walking down the street, and you just don't feel that angst. You don't feel that the eyeballs on you. Like I would feel that in Seattle, or I would definitely feel it in Dallas, and even sometimes in New York.
Yeah.
And unlike the U.S., the gay and trans is not a political issue down here, and that you don't have politicians running around demonizing gay people in order to get votes. It just doesn't happen. Like if they say anything about gay people, they say something, a statement in support of the gay community and gay rights. And yeah, it's just like not an issue at all anywhere.
You know what I love also, like you just mentioned, that you have all generations of family going to the Pride Parade. You have parents, the grandparents, the great-grandparents, everybody just chimes in. It's not a big thing. Whereas here in the U.S., not so much. Yeah. It's not more of a family-oriented thing.
Yeah, I don't think my mother has ever, I've never taken my mom to Pride.
No, mine either.
I'd have to explain way too much. Like, yeah. No, I don't do that, Mom. That right. I do, not that. Right.
But also, here's a cultural note, is that Mexicans have a lot of festivals, events, parades. It's pretty, especially in Mexico City, it's pretty constant, nonstop or whatever. And people love a parade and they'll go to the parade just because it's a parade. They don't care that it's gay. Next week, there'll be a parade for the military and they go to that, or a parade for Christmas and they go to that. So it's they love events.
That's why I love the song "Don't Rain on My Parade."
And even here, when it rains, 2 days ago, it was pouring, and the military guard that had been practicing their band every morning across on the other side of our building, dressed in their whites, getting soaked, but enjoying every moment of it. It was,
there you go.
It was a fun thing to watch.
So you mentioned you live near a gayborhood. So Is there a specific gayborhood in Mexico City?
Yes.
Where there are gay bars and gay restaurants?
It's the gayborhood is in Colonia Juarez, J-U-A-R-E-Z, Juarez. And it's centered mostly on two streets, Burgo and Londres, Hamburg and London Street in Juarez neighborhood. And there's a ton of gay bars. In the U.S., it's like in Dallas, a lot of the gay bars are closing and disappearing. That doesn't seem to be the case here. There's as many gay bars here as there was, you know, back in the 80s, I think. And people go to them and use them. And then there's a lot of like restaurants and shops and stuff like that. And the gayborhood is very identifiable because they paint all the crosswalks with rainbow stripes, and they've got rainbow colored umbrellas suspended over the street, or colored streamers. And you're pretty aware that you're in the neighborhood is called Zona Rosa, the pink zone. So,
John,
which was actually, Zona Rosa was named before it became the gayborhood, because the bricks, the color of the bricks that they used to pave the sidewalks were pink. And it just happened to become Zona Rosa. So it actually became, coincidentally, the pink zone, which was also the gayborhood. So right. And it's also mixed. I would like to add something that's slightly contrary to what we're talking about. A lot of Mexican guys that we have met here, friends of ours, and women as well, depending on their, it seems to be more of a class distinction. And if they are from an upper class family, they're open and there's no issues. If they are from lower class families, typically there's a lot more people are semi-closeted. Like, their family might know they have a partner. They may have never met the partner. They may have been together for 10 years and not met. We have one couple friend that they've been together for 10 years and they have never met the other's family members. Hmm. They both know about them, but they just don't talk about it. So it really depends on the family. So there is that side as well, but it's definitely changing. There is a conservative bent here. This is still a Catholic country.
Yeah.
And you do have some very, very Catholic grandmas that do not approve.
Right.
Even though the law says it's okay. But politically, there were some physical concerns a number of years ago for the LGBTQ community here. And the government really came in and said, we're not doing this. Like, there's hotlines. You report these people if they're doing this. So the government is really very much, even the conservative government is very much about equality. I mean, we've, in the process of doing our remodeling our new home, we actually met the woman who lived in what will be my office in 1966. We met her the other day, and she came over to our apartment because she's a friend of our architects, both very upper class, very wealthy families. And no one's even batted an eye that it's two men doing this. It's really, it's just, it's a non-issue. It's not even a consideration.
Non-issue. And I would say, and like Zach mentioned, it is a Catholic country for sure, historically and culturally, but the Catholic Church doesn't run the country like it used to. They really have separated the church from the state, and I have not seen or heard anything of the Catholic Church. They've kind of dropped the homophobia in Mexico. You don't hear statements from them condemning gay people or anything like that. They've dropped that because I think they know that that just doesn't fly with ordinary Mexicans. So
yeah, we should take lessons from them.
Yeah, for sure. I'm no expert on Mexican culture, but it's this weird dichotomy, it seems like to me, like where they're very Catholic, they're culturally Catholic, and they love the Catholic Church and all the history and the traditions of it and stuff like that. But in their day-to-day life, they like aren't like staunchly Catholic theologians or anything. It's more cultural than religious, if that makes sense.
Gotcha. And before I forget, do both of you speak Spanish?
I had like decent level, like tourist Spanish when I arrived here, and I've been really studying and working on it. And my Spanish is 10 times better than it was a year ago. It's still, I tell people that I'm functional in Spanish, not fluent. So I can
get by.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've gone and like applied for permits with the government offices and I conducted the whole thing in Spanish and I can get by. So, but like, as far as like going to like a bar and having a screaming conversation with someone in Spanish, no. That's not going to happen. So I will, for your listeners, if they want to know how to learn, improve their Spanish, the best thing you can do is watch TV in Spanish with Spanish subtitles. That helps your Spanish immensely and really quickly. I listen to music in Spanish only. And then the other thing I do that's really, really good is Google News, the app. You can select the news that you want to get. So I get news about the U.S. and Mexico in Spanish. And when I'm reading an article, when I hit a word that I don't understand, all you do is like click on that word and it will pop up the translation instantly. So it doesn't slow you down. And you can really, that improves your Spanish too a lot. And Spanish is not the hardest language in the world to learn. It's of all the foreign languages you can learn, it's one of the easier ones. So.
Yeah, we were trying to learn Spanish for Spain when we were going on our trip, but that's been put back now for a while. But Zach, how about you? Do you speak?
My Spanish is, I completely can get around. I used to have a policy that I would refuse to do business in Spanish because my Spanish is definitely not formal in any way, shape, or form. The last company I was working for when we first moved here, part of the reason we moved down at the time, was an American-owned company, but most of the 90% of the 95% of the staff was Mexican, bilingual, but Mexican. And so all of our meetings were in Spanish, like our weekly meetings. So my quality of my Spanish went way, way, way up with that. And I would say just to tag on to what John is saying, don't be afraid. When I lived here before, I was always very concerned about being proper and saying things correctly. And now I don't care. I just like say it and I'll get, and they're like, I'll rephrase it. And they're like, okay, got it now. And I don't speak in tenses really. I pretty much speak in one tense and that's current, the present tense, but it works, right? And Mexican people love that you make the attempt. And a lot of times conversations, like with my immigration guy, for example, I speak to him in English and he speaks to me in Spanish. And that's how we do the entire meeting because both of our understandings are there, but it's just easier. So there's a lot of Spanglish that happens. Also, depending on the neighborhood that you're in, John and I were just in Guadalajara last week, and there's very little English in Guadalajara versus Mexico City. If you are in Condesa or Roma or any of the gringo-fied neighborhoods, frequently, if they don't know you speak any Spanish, they'll bring you an English menu just to start off with. So language is really not a barrier here. And if you have any sense of technology, you can carry translators. I actually have earbuds that simultaneously translate the conversation, and wow. I can speak in English and it will read it out on my screen. So, I mean, there's that kind of technology that makes it almost effortless to live anywhere, but specifically here.
Cool. And also, particularly in Mexico City, anyone who has a college degree or is a professional or is in any way associated with the tourism industry, they all speak English. So, you know, sometimes it's actually frustrating for me because I want to practice my Spanish.
And then they'll
see that
English.
I'm a gringo and they just launch into English.
Yeah.
So, because they want to practice their English.
Yeah.
And I have a friend that lives in Puebla. And mm-hmm. he's an American, and he's been there for 15 years, does not speak one single word of Spanish.
Really?
Nothing.
And
no.
Puebla
and he gets
is
along
all Spanish.
Just fine. And Puebla is a heavily Spanish town.
Spoken, yeah.
And he does fine. So I don't know how he does it, but he gets around just fine. So
yeah, I would say language is never a barrier.
If people are thinking about moving here, I wouldn't worry about the language. It will...
Cool.
It'll come, or you just, part of it is you have to accept the fact that like, I may never ever be completely 100% fluent in Spanish, and
right.
I can live with that.
Yeah.
So,
but really the more Spanish you speak, the richer your experience is.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So
do not move here and not learn any Spanish. It's
right.
rude and, you know,
yeah,
bad.
You're
that's
in,
bad.
You're in Mexico. That's the least thing.
Speak
yeah.
the effing language. Yes.
Yes. Try to make an effort.
That's true in any country I've lived in. So I speak what I call taxi level. I speak taxi level Cantonese. My Japanese is now back down to a level of taxi. And I was not fluent in Japanese, but I was much closer to fluency. But even having a taxi level where you can order in a restaurant, where you can have a cab go where you need to go, where you can have a conversation with a shop clerk, like it just makes things so much more robust. And then also when you have friends that are natively Spanish speaking or native speaking to the country that you're in, you end up creating a communication. Like my business partner is Mexican. She's lived in the States, but she's Mexican. So she'll, in the middle of a conversation, she'll say, "What's that word?" I'm like, she'll say it in Spanish, and I'll say it in English. And even in the structure of a meeting, a formal structure of a meeting, it doesn't matter. Like everyone's like, whatever we need to do to get the communication out. So not judging yourself and not judging other people about the quality of their English or whatever your native language is really, I think, it just happens. And Americans aren't used to that because we're not faced with it. But like in Europe, everyone speaks different languages.
Right.
And even if you don't, you still can get along. Like French people can understand enough Italian and the Italians speak enough French
right.
that they can actually figure out that I don't want mayonnaise on my pizza. So, yeah. So I think that's the language, but just don't let language be a barrier.
Okay.
The thing that changed it for me one time was I was like kind of whining about how my Spanish wasn't very good. And our best friend here, who's Mexican, he said, "Oh, don't worry about that." He said, "It's so cute to see you struggle to say stuff." He said, "I love to watch you do
they
it."
They love it. They yeah. love it.
And they appreciate it.
They do.
They really appreciate it.
And then they'll change to English if they find you're struggling too much.
Yeah, if you really, really get stuck.
So that brings us, you did mention also you have some Spanish friends. How easy would you say is it to meet locals? Is it difficult to meet locals?
Mexican friends, first of all, not Spanish, Mexican.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say Spanish? Oops.
You said.
Oops.
We actually have Spanish friends too, but we have Spanish friends as well. But I would say it's interesting. Our Mexican friends, most of them are bicultural. My closest friends of like 20 plus years, they are 100% Mexican, but they spent a lot of time in Europe. They were educated in wherever, out of the country. There's a lot of that. So I think when you're dealing with those people that kind of have more of a similar background, it's no issue at all. When you have people that have different backgrounds, it is a very classist society mm-hmm. here, and that needs to be respected and honored because we're not going to change that. And there's subtleties that you have to be aware of that you learn when you're living in a foreign country, but especially in Mexico, that there's people that kind of are the same class as you might be. And also when Americans come here, frequently their class goes up. because their money goes further here, but not even money. It's more their education, their experiences, how they're living, the quality of their life is higher here than it would be in Manhattan, for example. So you're accessing a different echelon of people that you wouldn't necessarily have access to in your hometown. And that's true. I've felt that to be true everywhere I've lived in the world. I've met people that there was no way in hell I would have met them if we were living in New Jersey.
Right.
It just never would have happened.
Most of the friends that we've made here are people who are professionals or educated or professionals that have lived in the U.S. at some point or have been there frequently or something. And right. And so when we socialize with them, the conversation kind of flips back and forth between Spanish and English. We don't have any friends and probably never will have friends who are like 100% Mexican, have never been outside of Mexico and only speak Spanish.
Right.
That's probably just not going to happen for us. Gotcha. Which is sad, but you know, this is the way it is.
The way it is. So, yep.
And you were asking about how do we meeting people. There's an app called Scruff. And the great thing about that when you live here is that I can talk to people on Scruff in Spanish because I'm typing a text message and I can take the time to make sure that what I'm saying is correct. And it's a great way to practice your Spanish with people that you may never, ever meet. But I have conversations with people in Spanish and I can take my time to text it. So
conversely, our best friend, he's our best friends. One of them is a director. We met them on Scruff. That's how we met them. And we were out with them last night. Like we went out drinking and dancing and did the whole thing last night. So it's again, technology really helps when you're assimilating into a culture.
Yeah.
Especially if you're not working. Mexico City has proven to be a little bit harder to meet people. I'm not 25, hang out in bars every night anymore like I was when I lived in Vallarta, or 30, I guess, when I moved to Vallarta. But so it's a little bit harder when you're older. My mom, who is 80, who also lives here, she has had a hard time meeting contemporaries as well. A lot of her friends are, she has one of her best friends is a 35-year-old Taiwanese woman. So it's a little bit more challenging, like it is in New York or any big fast moving city, to meet people because people have lives. If you're living in some of the retiree enclaves like San Miguel de Allende or Vallarta or Ajijic or Cancun or anywhere like that, it's much easier to meet people because you're not working. You volunteer, you work at the orphanage, you work at the library, you do this. That's what people do with their time in these enclaves. So they're able to meet people in a way. So that's been a little bit more challenging here than other places, but.
So on that point, one of the reasons that Americans who move to Mexico tend to move either to San Miguel or Puerto Vallarta or Lake Chapala, those are kind of the three biggies. If you move to one of those three cities, you should be prepared that your friends are probably going to be also fellow Americans. You're going to end up with or Germans or French or something like that, but not so much Mexicans. If you move to a big city like Guadalajara or Mexico City, you're going to have more Mexican friends. And one of the reasons we chose Mexico City was I wanted to have a real Mexican experience and have Mexican friends and not hang out with a bunch of Americans. In Mexico City, if you live in the right neighborhoods, which is Roma or Condesa, which is where all the Americans move to in Mexico City, you will probably also end up with a lot of American friends.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. Well, you do. You're always going to meet other Americans and other Europeans and Canadians.
Right.
It just happens. You're expats, and
right.
you have that immediate connection because you both have a similar outlook on the world.
Right.
So even before you've met someone, you know that they weren't satisfied or they wanted more or whatever when they've moved to a foreign country, especially when they're still working age and retired too.
The other little weird thing about Mexico City is that there are a lot of younger they call them digital nomads. And they're sort of people that come down here, Americans and Europeans, but they're only here for like 6 months, maybe a year, and then they go back to whence they came. So we meet people like that, but you kind of have this understanding like, this person's not going to be permanent in my life. They're going to disappear. So
right.
My nephew actually was down here for 6 months because he's a digital nomad, and it was great fun to have him. So,
gotcha.
And Mexico City also is a very big tourist town. There's a lot of tourism here. And so off the apps and things like that, you do meet people and you form like little brief friendships where you are friends with someone for 2 weeks and then they go back.
Right.
But that's fun too.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us a little bit about the local economy. What's that like? Can you give us examples of real estate?
There's a huge economic disparity here between the working class and the wealthy class, and then the foreigners that come in that can fall anywhere in between that, but generally middle to upper. I would say property in Mexico City is comparable to Dallas, I would say, as far as what you're going to get, location, all of that. So it's not a cheap, it's not LA, it's not Manhattan, but it's not an inexpensive city as far as real estate. The interesting thing here is that rent is not compensatory to the value of the property in the same way it is in the States. So $1 million property in Dallas, for example, is going to be $10,000-$12,000 a month for rent.
Right.
Here, that same apartment is $4,000 or $3,500 a month for the same apartment. So there's a lot, if you're renting is very different than if you're buying. Once you buy, the overhead is very, very low. I mean, our new condo, I think our HOAs are like $300 a month or something compared to $1,700 in Dallas. So it's very different. Working class, the people in the service industry here, like our housekeeper, who we love and adore, and she's part of our family, she makes 600 pesos a day, which for her is a really, really great salary. And she gets benefits, government benefits and all of that now that we're able to register domestic staff. So you have to be very cautious of that and very aware that, especially as a foreigner, you are, even if you're not considered wealthy where you're from, here you are. And you have to be smart about that. And there is definitely lines and that you have to maintain that are cultural lines that really have to be maintained in order for everything to work the way it needs to work. Mexico City, as far as living in Mexico, is cheaper than most of the gringo enclaves around the country. Like, food is cheaper here than, say, even in San Miguel de Allende, which is only 3 hours away. It's definitely cheaper than Vallarta. It's for nationals living in pesos, it's a very, very expensive city to live in. If you have the luxury of making dollars, even if it's your retirement or whatever, you're making dollars and living in pesos. So it's a much, even with the challenging exchange rate today, your money goes a lot further here, a lot further. I mean, John lives on his retirement. My mother lives on hers. And there is no way they could live on the level of life that we live here. There is no way they could do that on the amounts of money that they're in the States. It'd be a fine existence in the US,
yeah.
But it would not. I mean, we travel all the time. We eat beautiful food. We don't really have any limitations here.
Gotcha.
I would add to that. Your question was about like real estate and things like that. But it is possible to live in Mexico City very, very inexpensively. So I have a friend who's originally from Dallas who lives here, and his rent is $800 a month.
So for a great apartment.
Yeah, a very nice apartment in El Centro, which is downtown. So you can, if you have limited resources, like you're on Social Security and you're careful about where you live, or you're willing to maybe have a roommate, you can live here very, very inexpensively.
Yeah.
Gotcha. How about, give us an example, like a 2-bedroom, 2-bath condo. What are we looking
at? To rent?
No, to buy.
To buy?
To buy. It depends on the neighborhood. So in Roma and Condesa, which are, I like to call them the gringo starter neighborhoods because that's where everyone feels most comfortable. They live there a year and then they realize there are other neighborhoods. You can get a 2-bath, 2-bedroom in those neighborhoods starting, what, John, at about $250,000? Depending, and then all the way up to a million if you wanted to, but you could get a nice place. If you move to other neighborhoods that are equally as nice, but maybe not as gringo popular, but that are equally as lovely, you can buy a place, a two bedroom. Well, yeah, there's so many different levels. New construction, you're going to be looking at $250,000, $300,000 for a two bedroom.
It's pretty good.
But if you go into an older building in a less popular neighborhood to buy a condo or something, you could probably get into it for $150,000. Wow. 200, yeah. 250.
That's like a 30-minute commute into Zona Rosa or wherever. If you go out just that far, the prices are dramatically different. Yeah. Places like Vallarta's gotten very expensive in my mind. If you're living in the heart of Zona Romantica, which is the neighborhood in Vallarta, you're looking at $400,000-$500,000 to get your foot in the market there if you're living in that neighborhood. When I lived there, it was $75,000 to get into the neighborhood, but it's changed a lot. San Miguel de Allende has also gotten much more expensive, but the minute you leave the centro, then the prices drop dramatically.
Right.
So it really depends on the lifestyle that you want to have, the neighborhood you want to live in, and what your budget is. But there's definitely there's budgets for all levels, which is really nice.
And then as far as, go ahead.
As far as medical goes, as always happens in our household, as far as medical goes, that is really one of the biggest things. Like I have health insurance in the U.S. and California. John has Medicare in the U.S., just switched to that recently. But all of our day-to-day medical stuff, we go to see doctors here. I can get reimbursed for it. I rarely submit them.
You pay out of pocket.
You pay out of pocket. For example, my mother had COVID and pneumonia at the same time. Not great for an 80-year-old woman.
No.
But she went and saw a lung specialist that is one of the 10 lung specialists in the world that is licensed to do lung transplants. She was with him for an hour and a half. He did all these tests, all of her background, determined that she had some stuff that she didn't know about. And the entire bill was $65.
Wow. It's incredible.
Yeah.
So it's the quality of the care here is spectacular. And we have all of our dental work has been done here for years because it's much better work. And it's a third to a half of the price for the most expensive dentist in the city.
Yeah. So when we first arrived, I had a lot of delayed dental work because of the COVID. My dentist disappeared in Dallas. So I went to a dentist here and I had a lot of work done that would in the U.S. would have been somewhere from $15,000 to $20,000. Yeah. And here the total bill was $3,000. So, and here's another example. Zach got sick with flu or something like that. And we actually had a for real doctor come to the house, visit with him and write prescriptions. And the cost for that was how much was it, Zach?
It's 1,200 pesos. So it's about $60, $65 for a house call.
Yeah,
for a house call. You can't get that in the U.S. No matter.
Yeah, I remember in the 60s.
Can't get a house call.
In the 60s, we had house calls, and then they stopped. You'd never get a house call now because what happens when people come to people's doors that they don't know? Unfortunately, that's the world.
And also, medications here are a lot more available than they are in the U.S. So in U.S., things that you have to have a prescription for here, you can just go into the pharmacy and ask for it and they just give you the pills.
Or if you need a prescription, there's a medical office right next door that's not connected to the pharmacy, air quotes, and they're like, oh, you obviously, and you know what you have. Like I've had an upper respiratory, I know what to do. I don't need didn't you go to a doc in the box recently, John? It was 60 pesos or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The consultation with a doctor at the pharmacy is it's $5 or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy.
I love that. Doc in a box.
Doc in a box. So
the other thing that we, on real estate here, is for people who purchase, the thing that they may not be aware of is that the property taxes here are astoundingly low. If you have an apartment here, your property taxes might be $500 a year. Crazy. Whereas in Dallas, my apartment in Dallas, I was paying $7,000 a year property taxes.
Yeah, I believe it.
Yep. So that's a huge, huge difference here.
However, sure there is when you're purchasing, you do pay a sales tax when you buy the apartment. So that's part of your initial budget has to include that, which is pretty substantial. It's about, I mean, close like total tax and closing costs here is about 10%.
Hmm. But
of the purchase price. But after you're in,
you don't pay anything.
It's so little. It's so little. My office building in Vallarta, I paid $125 a year in property tax for the whole building.
It's crazy.
So, yeah. I mean, it was crazy.
And utility bills also are very,
that's
very
what I was gonna
low.
Ask
so our electric bill is like maybe $50 a month. Internet service is again like $50 a month, $75 a month.
That's our whole phone and internet is $75 a month.
All of our utilities, phones, and internet added up together per month is about somewhere between $200 and $300.
That's great.
And that's living in Mexico City. If you live in one of the beach cities, your electric is going to be a lot higher because of air conditioning. It was about, I think before when I lived in Vallarta in the summer months, my electric bill, which was 98% air conditioning, was typically about 1500 pesos to 2000 pesos a month. So $75 to $100 a month. And see, electricity is not inexpensive here. Neither is gas, but it all kind of comes out in the wash and it ends up being less than the state.
The other thing you have to factor in here too, is that the climate in Mexico City, the climate is so mild that our apartment does not have air conditioning and does not have heating.
Oh, you don't? Wow.
No,
and you don't need it.
We have heat. We do have heat, John. We have radiant
it's
heat.
Broken.
We've never actually, it was broken. We tried to get it fixed and didn't fix it. But literally, we only needed it for like 2 weeks, which meant for 2 weeks, you had to put a sweater on and wear socks. I mean, that's like, oh, poor us, right? It's really not bad. With global warming, it has changed. Most new construction now does have central AC and central heat for two reasons. A, they know who their buyers are, and their buyers want perfect ambient temperatures all the time. But secondly, it is getting warmer here than it was before. So, and for some reason, 80 degrees here seems warmer than 80 degrees in Texas, partially because nothing's air conditioned. So you feel the 80 degrees no matter where you are.
So even if you go in stores, they're not air conditioned?
Most are not. Like department stores are, movie theaters are, big spaces like that are, but a typical restaurant, no. Everything's open. You can actually, in Mexico City, you can dine outside.
Outdoors.
You can, what's the fancy French word for it? Alfresco, dining alfresco.
Alfresco.
Italian, not French, but you can dine alfresco pretty much 10 and a half months a year here.
Hmm.
You might have a heat lamp.
Awesome.
You might have cover, but it's a lot of restaurants, 90% of their seating is exposed. So it's very much indoor-outdoor living here.
Oh, that's cool. It's better than here in Phoenix.
No.
The other aspect of living here, the cost of living here is food. So restaurant prices are cheaper than the U.S., but not dramatically cheaper. I'd say they're like maybe 75% of the cost that they would be in the U.S. But if you buy groceries here, and they have all these like outdoor farmer market kind of things that you can go buy groceries there, and then even at the grocery stores, the food is less expensive. So if you're really on a budget and you buy your food at the farmers markets, you can eat really, really inexpensively here. And they have street stands that sell tacos and great food, like really good food. And a lunch at any of those is $2, $3 if you're splurging.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's the great thing here. You can go like specifically in Mexico City. Mexico City has some of the top restaurants in the world, literally Pujol being one of them. And like a tasting menu at Pujol is 175 US. That same tasting menu in New York is going to be 375.
Right.
In LA, 375. So even at the fancier, higher culinary experience level, it's still far more approachable and accessible than it would be in the US. And we also hear now there's all different levels of grocery stores. So you can go to the really, really high-end grocery stores that have a lot of imported products, and you can go to the the local places to get your vegetables. And then on the weekends, like a 10-minute walk from our house, on Saturdays, there's this open market and they sell clothes. On Sunday, everything switches around and it's all food. And they have cheeses and artisanal breads. And unlike the U.S., where farmers markets are usually more expensive because it's smaller farmers, not mass produced stuff, here it's actually less expensive than going to the grocery store. So you have your cart and your basket and you go and you do your shopping and you come home.
And beautiful, beautiful produce.
Like, I'm sure.
Spectacular. Good.
Yep.
I'm sure.
So there's a lot, again, in this city, you can live at so many different levels and live at each of those different levels. You can have a lovely existence.
Got it. So tell us a little bit about the arts and culture scene. What's that like?
Oh, man.
I'll talk about the food scene. Food, Mexico City specifically, but all of Mexico is all about food. Mexicans are about food. I don't care if it's a taco stand or top five restaurants in the world. It's all about food here. I'm a trained chef and I'm not currently working as a chef, but I obviously love food. And the creativity in this country is just remarkable, the level of quality of the food. And one of the best meals John and I have had since we've lived here, we were in Oaxaca, outside of Oaxaca, driving around, and a good friend of ours who owns a Ricea company here, or mezcal company rather, he sent us to this little place, and we were literally driving out there, and John's like, I'm a little concerned. This seems a little farlet. And then all of a sudden, in the middle of nowhere, where there's chickens and dogs in the street and mud pits and all that stuff, we pull up to this little garage that's part of a house and literally had the most amazing meal that I've probably eaten in Mexico.
Wow.
Ever. And it was a prefix. It was, I don't know how many courses. It was like five courses. It was paired with different mezcals. Lunch for the two of us was 750 pesos, which is about $40.
And, wow. And eight different flavors of mole.
Yeah. She was like, yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, she does eight different flavors of fantastic moles. So you really, there's so many options on the food side. On the art side, here, this is the hottest art market in the world right now for modern artists. We have a very good friend who is an art dealer here, and my stepbrother shows around the world. He's a very renowned artist. And this market, we have Art Basel here. Not Art Basel. It's, what's it called here, John? The version of Art Basel, but we have it here. We just went. It was amazing. So like literally all the world's biggest art dealers are in town. And the whole city, from fledgling artists to really established artists, are represented here. So there's a huge artistic community, and it's a great place to invest in art. And again, at all different levels. John, do you want to talk about architecture?
Yeah. So, but first I would say that Mexico City has 150 different museums here, and almost all of those museums are free. So it's the art and culture and museums is very accessible. Some really great museums. The chief being like the Museum of Anthropology has all the pre-Hispanic art in it, and it is a must-see world-class museum. It's really wonderful. Tons and tons of art galleries and shops that are selling art, and they tend to have all these weekend art fair things in the park where you just go and there's like several hundred artists showing their paintings and stuff like that, that for that sort of thing. The thing I've noticed here that's a little surprising to me, because Mexico City is the big city of Mexico, you would think they'd have like a more active theater scene. There's no equivalent of Broadway here.
I was going to ask you about that.
You don't get like the big Broadway plays so much. There is a very active sort of community theater level here, and we've been to a couple of plays. We have a friend who's an actor. He's currently in a couple of plays.
So American.
If you like the community theater level of theater, there's a lot of that here too. Tons and tons like concerts. If Madonna goes on world tour, one of the stops guaranteed is going to be Mexico City. So like all the big name acts come here, and then there's like tons and tons of music festivals and things like that.
They're very big on outdoor
DJs, electronic dance music, like all of that is huge.
We do get
Broadway, but I would say it's above community theater, it's professional theater, but it's not Broadway level. Like right now they've got Vasalina, which is Grease, the Mexican version of Grease. Our friend, there's a number of different shows. So there is that, but it's always in Spanish, obviously.
Yeah.
And so it's not the same experience for us going, but for nationals going or people that are completely fluent in Spanish, both fluency and culturally, they can go to those kinds of shows. There aren't as many, and they're not at the same level of a Broadway. They're like when Broadway goes on tour, when they're in Poughkeepsie or they're in, I don't know, somewhere in Ohio, right?
Yeah.
It's or Phoenix for that matter. You're not going to get the Broadway experience, mm-hmm. but you're going to get decent theater.
Right.
Jazz is a big thing here. There's a number, there's not a lot of clubs. There's like four or five jazz clubs that are really, really good and get some really top talent from around the world. You do get small concerts, but I would say it's mostly music and DJs, and that's kind of the focus here.
And then
live performance.
As far as like architecture goes, the Mexico City is, if you dig architecture, this is the place to be, because man, they have everything going back to the 1600s, Spanish colonial, all the way up to like super, super contemporary architecture. And I just love walking around, just looking at buildings. It's wonderful, wonderful. And the other thing that Mexico has tons of is pre-Hispanic archaeological sites. So they've got the Teotihuacan, which is the pyramids just outside the city. I always take people to that. They've got the Templo Mayor in downtown Mexico City, which is the original Aztec temple. They've got that. And then scattered all over the country there's like, I don't know the exact number. It was like 3,000 or 4,000 archaeological sites in the country.
Wow.
So if you're into that, you can spend the entire rest of your life studying that stuff.
And of those archaeological sites, only 200 have actually been excavated and you can tour. So, I mean, it's endless, like what they're doing with the Mayan train right now. That's going to open up a whole bunch of new areas. But yeah, there's a lot. You get everything here. Fashion is huge here. My business partner just did the Christian Dior show here. It was the Christian Dior cruise line collection. And it was this three-hour spectacle. It was just absolutely amazing. But they're hosting it in a 600-year-old school.
Right.
It's just the juxtaposition of the contemporary and the historic is really palatable here. You really experience it every day you feel it.
Yes. And the other thing that needs to be mentioned is that there is a ton of outdoor activities. So there's lots of walking. They close down Reforma every single Sunday so that people can bicycle on it. That Reforma is the big main street. And then Mexico City is ringed by mountains, so within a 30-hour drive, you can be up in the mountains hiking on beautiful, beautiful mountains. Great beaches are a 2-hour plane ride away. Like, so if you're into outdoor activities, like there's a lot of outdoor here.
Yep.
Great.
Which is surprising. I didn't realize there was hiking in this city till we moved here. And like, oh, it's a hiking group. And I'm like, oh,
wow.
Okay, cool. I haven't done it yet, but it's
everything.
There.
It makes me want to visit.
Come down.
Please do. Yeah, come stay with us.
So thank you. So tell us a little bit about public transportation. It's a big city. What do you know what the population is, by the way?
24 million.
Yes.
24 million
people.
Okay,
it's
so
huge.
With a city of 24 million, I suppose they do have some sort of transportation system. Tell us a little bit about that. Do they have subways, buses?
That's a question for me because Zach doesn't use it at all. Mexico City has a really extensive mass transit system that's made up of several different components. So they have a subway. They've got dedicated bus lines with permanent stations, so it functions sort of like light rail. Mm-hmm. And then they've also got your typical city buses, and they've got a million taxis, and Uber is big here. An interesting thing they have is they have cable cars that take you from the east side of town all the way over to the west side on a gondola. It's super fun to see this, a good way to see the city. And it's, there's no traffic stops there or anything like that. And when they set up the mass transit system back in the 60s, a large number of people in Mexico were illiterate. They couldn't read at all. So the entire system is color-coded and has symbols for stations. So you can navigate the mass transit here and not even be able to read. So it's very easy to navigate.
It was also, let me interject one thing, John. It wasn't just for people that were illiterate. There's also, I don't know how many different dialects of Nahual and the different languages that are natively spoken here. So when people come in from the mountains, they can and go to trade their goods at the markets. They could still navigate the system with speaking whatever their language was by following the symbols.
Cool. Right. The one downside of the mass transit here, I would say, is that because it serves 22 million people and it probably needs to be twice as big as it is now, I would not get on the subway during morning rush hour or evening rush hour. It's super crowded. It's just like not
worse than
fun.
New York City.
But Mexico City is very, very walkable. So I end up walking a lot of places. I don't even Uber. I just, if something is within an hour walk, I'll just walk it. Because
so from your home,
you see a million things.
From your home, can you walk to like the grocery store, the pharmacy, the doctor, whatever you need?
Our dentist, we need to Uber to because he's in Polanco, but it's a 20-minute Uber ride. I mean, you could technically walk it, and John has walked it before.
I have walked
it. The only public that I use, because I work from home, so I really don't need to go that many places, I use the city bike system. So it's EcoBC, and you pay, $30 a year or something like that. And you go up, you have a little app on your phone, you scan it, it releases the bike, it tells you where you need to go, you follow it, you get to your destination, you park your bike and you walk. So for me to walk to my mom's is like 40 minutes, but it's like a 12-minute bike ride. And that's how I get around the city in dedicated lanes.
Yes, they have dedicated lanes, so it's very safe to ride bikes here. It's not like taking your life into your hands to ride on a bicycle in Dallas, Texas. Very safe here.
Yeah, like
New York
you
get a
City
lot of attitude
well.
From the bikers when you're in their lane. They're like they honk and scream at you and be like, "Get out of my lane!" You're like, "Sorry." Just
so how much does the subway cost?
Oh my gosh! a typical subway ride costs 6 pesos, which is like 30 cents.
Oh my God. It's crazy. Yeah.
It depends on how far you're going. I don't know really, but I think it has to do with distance and how many trains you have to change. And if you've got to do train and bus combination.
You buy a Metro card, a plastic Metro card that you can reload with more money.
Mm-hmm.
And that card is good on every mass transit they have, buses, the subway, the cable cars, everything.
So the bicycles, everything.
Bikes, everything. It's super, super, super unified system and very easy to use.
Okay, let's talk about crime. Everybody wants to know about crime in Mexico.
Is it safe?
Is it safe? Is it the cartel so they're going to get me? So tell us a little bit about
Mexico. Here's what
Mexico
I have said.
City.
Here, this is what I always say to clients, to friends, to anyone coming down that has that concern. First, I say, my 80-year-old mother lives alone in Roma Norte, and she's fine. So that's how I start off. And I said, if you don't engage with prostitutes, if you're not buying drugs from street drug dealers, if you're not hanging out in cartel bars, you're going to be fine. It's fine. Yes, that exists here. It is an issue in this country, the same way it's an issue in the United States. Mexicans don't carry guns the way Americans now carry guns. To get a gun license here is very, very challenging, and you really have to have a reason. Random people don't carry guns here. John can share one of our first stories when we first moved here of an experience as two Americans living in Texas moving to Mexico City. It's a big city. There is crime. You have to be aware. But there's crime in Phoenix. There's crime in New York. There's crime in LA.
Right.
You've got to be aware. In the neighborhoods that most of us are going to be living in, they're perfectly safe. If it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you're coming out of a nightclub, take an Uber. Don't be a dumbass. Take an Uber. But you should take an Uber in Dallas or New York or LA also.
Right, anywhere.
Right? So it's no different than any other city. Specifically on the subway, my mother and I and some friends were going further outside of the city to one of the big markets. This was during the early Trump years, and there were some gang members that were targeting us verbally, and we probably would have gotten mugged, to be quite honest. But what happened? Out of nowhere, we were surrounded by 8 transit police that stayed with us. They got us on the subway. They got us on the correct subway. They let the nasty guys go. And they took us, they were with us until we got to an area that they got off the subway and they felt we were going to be safe. So I don't go there anymore. I definitely don't let my mother go there anymore. She's been banned from taking the subway. But it's never an issue. I've lived in this country for now a total of 11 years. And I have had more problems in the States. I mean, I got mugged in Boston. I got mugged in New York. I've never been mugged here. I've never even been threatened here.
Yeah.
So it's the big difference is no safe. Guns, too.
No guns. No guns is a big difference.
It is a
difference. You might have some drunk guy giving you crap at 3 o'clock in the morning on a drunk. But
right.
That's going to happen.
But
anyway.
If you go to the supermarket, like we go to the supermarket, do you feel like, where's the exits? Where am I going to escape to? What happens if somebody comes in and nope. like shoots up the place? You're not
nope,
thinking.
Not a concern.
In Mexico.
Cue John on the escalator. Escalator story, John. Tell that one.
Oh, yeah. So we moved here and we'd only been here for like a week, and we went to the shopping mall and we suddenly heard this shattering glass and people screaming. And I turned to him and I said, oh, shit, it's a mass shooter. Like we got to get out. We got to get out. Oh, my God.
Active shooter.
No, it was the glass panel on the escalator shattered. Somebody kicked it or something happened to it. It shattered and people like got
scattered.
Glass rained on them.
Yeah.
But no,
shrapnel.
It's completely, I hate when Americans ask me, is it safe here? Usually what I tell them, I say, no, you know where it's not safe is in the U.S. where you can get shot and killed at any time, anywhere, because everyone has a gun.
Right.
That is not the case here. So the only crime that people will experience in Mexico, for the most part, is like crimes of opportunity. So
you can't
like set your purse next to a sidewalk
right.
cafe.
You have to be smart.
Somebody's going to just stroll by and pick it up. Or you don't
keep
leave
your
cell phone sitting on top of the table. You don't put your wallet in your back pocket.
Right.
Things like that. But
Common sense.
But we've been here for a year and 14 months, and the only crime that we've experienced since we've been here is, and it was my fault, really. I went to a big festival thing down on the Zocalo, which is the big main plaza with thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And someone reached into my pocket and took my cell phone. It was a pickpocket. So that's the only crime you're going to experience is like that kind of like sticky fingers kind of problems. But if you pay attention to where you are and where your purse is and your phone and your wallet, you're not going to have any problems.
The same way you have to do in Paris, the same way you have to do in Rome or Barcelona. Like it's the same. I got pickpocketed in Barcelona. I caught her. She had her hand and caught her. But, you know, it happens everywhere.
Yeah.
But not physically. There's very little, I hear very little about anyone ever having any physical or, yeah, like home invasions or those kinds of things are very, very rare here. And they do happen and you have to be smart about it, but it happens
happens
anywhere in the world. Yeah.
Sure.
So it's really this, the US media has really painted a inaccurate picture of what it's like. I mean, if you're in the northern states of Mexico with the border states, that are super dangerous. They are dangerous. There is no question about that. You just don't go there. It's fine.
Right.
But if you're like in Mexico City, I feel totally safe. Guadalajara, we feel safe. Vallarta. I mean, things happen occasionally, but I mean, it's just like, it's no different than any other city. And the cartel is not going to come after you
unless
you're selling drugs. And if you're
right.
selling drugs, guess what? That's your fault.
Yeah.
So
yep. Stay away.
But
yes.
Since we're on that point, I'm a giant pothead. I smoke pot every single day. Love it. I have no shame about admitting that I'm a pothead. Pot is easily accessible down here. It's very high quality. It's great.
Ganja.
And people smoke pot on the streets. They sit, you can pass a park and somebody will be sitting on a park bench smoking a joint and nobody cares. So
it's illegal. It's been legalized at the Supreme Court level. It has not, and they've been, the Supreme Court has been forcing local governments to come up with policy and people have been pushing back. So it's kind of in the stalemate right now. But the reality is with marijuana specifically, it's a non-issue. I mean, I think I know as many people, I know more people that smoke marijuana than drink here. I mean, it's
when we first arrived here, it was funny, actually. Like every single person we met said, "Oh, do you have a pot dealer yet? Because I'll give you the name of my guy. He's fabulous. You'll love him. Love him."
Oh,
and we literally got our first delivery of weed the second day we were here.
Delivered
to the door in 45 minutes.
To the door. Yes.
Unbelievable. So, and tell us about what it was like obtaining a visa. Like, how do you obtain a visa coming from the U.S.? What type of visa? Retirement visa, working visa, digital nomad? That's that kind of
John,
stuff.
John, do you want to start and go with the retirement route first?
There's two different. So I'm retired, and so I have a permanent resident card here, and you have to start the process for that in the United States, and you apply for it. To qualify for it, you have to have a certain level of income, or you are starting a business here, or you're employing someone, or you're bringing a huge amount of cash, like $500,000 or something. I qualify because my pension is high enough per month. I think the minimum requirement is $4,000 a month.
For permanent, I think it is. For temporary, it's less. It's like $2,500.
So anyway, you start the process in the U.S. Mm-hmm. You go to the Mexican consulate there. They give you a stamp. They tape in a piece of paper in your passport. Then when you arrive here, within 60 days after you arrive, you have to go to the Mexican consulate here and trade that temporary pass in for your permanent resident card. I would strongly recommend people to hire an advisor, facilitator to get you through the process, because there are some pitfalls that will slow down or mess up the process.
Right.
But it actually turned out to be a relatively easy process to do. Once you're finished, you think, oh, well, that wasn't that hard, really. So the most difficult part about it was that when I arrived here, I had to go to the Mexican consulate, and I showed up there at 4 a.m., stood in line for 2 or 3 hours, and then got an appointment for that day. I had to go disappear for 3 or 4 hours, then come back for my appointment, sit in lines for hours and hours until you finally get up to the clerk. Ugh. And once you get to the clerk, the switching it over and getting your permanent card is relatively simple and quick. But so there was one day that
bureaucracy
ran from 4 a.m. until about 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening.
And part of that's not typical. There was a giant computer crash and all this stuff. But that kind of stuff, you've got to be prepared for. It could be much easier than John's experience, but it's not going to be much harder. That pretty much covers the permanent. Temporary residency, there's two kinds, retired and then working. When I came down, I was working with a Mexican-based company, so they sponsored me initially. And now I sponsor myself with my own business. So that's something you can also do. It's more complicated to start that process in the U.S. than to switch it once you're here. It's easier to switch it here. Once you're here, there's other options that you can do. Having a really good immigration person on the speed dial is a good thing. When you have a temporary, you have to renew that temporary every year. When you have a permanent, John will never have to replace his permanent. I will have a temporary for, I think it's 3 years. And then at the fourth year, I will then automatically be turned into a permanent resident. So after that, I won't have to do it every year again.
Do they make you buy healthcare, like private insurance, for the first year?
No, they don't. No? Not like Spain. You're referencing Spain.
Yeah.
Spain, it's different. Here, no. There, you can choose to pay for Seguro Social, which is the national medical program. My father was going to move here at one point, and we were going to get him on Seguro Social, but then, so that would kind of be his, what we used to call major medical insurance, catastrophic medical insurance in case something was happening. As far as day-to-day maintenance, you just pay out of pocket. Yeah. It depends really on what your budget allows, but the government does not require it, to answer your question.
How about taxes?
There is a kind of...
There
is an insurance that some people buy that will fly you back to the U.S. if you have like a massive heart attack or a stroke or something like that.
How about taxes how do you pay taxes? Because you have to pay U.S. taxes because you'll always pay U.S. taxes.
My income comes from the U.S. and so I pay U.S. taxes and I do not pay Mexican taxes at all. I don't even file a tax return or anything.
Wow.
So for me, it's a combination because I make money in the U.S. and I make money in Mexico. So for me, the U.S., it's a little challenging when you're making money in both. But if you're just making money in Mexico, you actually make up to, I think it's $107,000. You don't pay, you pay Mexican tax on, but you don't pay U.S. taxes on that as an expat. Obviously, you if you're working in both countries like I am, you need to have an accountant that can manage all of that for you.
Right.
But if you're just making money in Mexico, then it's fine. If you do have, if you're retired and have investments in Mexico, you do have to pay U.S. tax on that. Investment here is fantastic compared to what you get in the States. I just, my mom just bought a 12-month CD that's 9.75% interest.
Wow.
Yeah. So she does pay, U.S. taxes on that, but it's way outperforming what her portfolio is doing in the States. So it makes sense. And it's not hard to do. The Mexican Hacienda, which is the Mexican IRS, and the IRS do now report back and forth to each other. So when you open a bank account here, you actually have to give your U.S. Social Security number now. That did not used to be the case, but it now is the case. So things have changed here tax-wise in the last few years, but it's very easy to do, and there are specialists that specialize in cross-border taxes. If you're retired, it's much easier. I mean, I know a lot of people now that don't even have Mexican bank accounts because credit cards are everywhere. They just withdraw. Charles Schwab, for example, returns all your fees back to you. Yep. That's what my dad did. And he lived in Lima, Peru, and he'd get paid in the U.S. from his retirement, and he would withdraw it into Soles in Peru from an ATM. And that's how he did it. So it's much easier to do now. It's not as complicated as it once was.
Yeah, I would say kind of on that same point is that if somebody's thinking about moving to Mexico, one of the things that they really need to research and know about is how are they going to get money from the U.S. into Mexico? And I have kind of fumbled around on that for a year trying to figure out the best way to do that. I banked at Chase, and they don't tell you this explicitly, but Chase pretty much won't service an account outside of the U.S. They just won't do it.
A lot they of block them with security and all that.
Every time you charge something, they block it, or it's just a
how about Wise?
Hassle.
Have you ever used Wise?
I don't use Wise personally. I have found that I have a Charles Schwab account, and they are sort of designed for people who live outside the U.S. and so it's easy to transfer money with them, and that's who I use. And you got to get set up with a Mexican bank. And I bank with a one called Intercam, which is specifically set up. Their tagline is the bank for foreigners living in Mexico. So they are specifically designed to make it easy for you to get set up here. Some of the Mexican banks have like really wackadoodle processes and procedures. And it's just like... oh my God. Like,
just want to open up an account and deposit money. Yeah. Withdraw money.
The insane thing about the one thing that just drives me bananas here in Mexico is like any process, whether it's government or a private corporation, a bank, if you have to go through some process, it's going to take four times longer and require four times more documentation to get the fucking thing done. It's just, I don't know why it is that way. Yep. It's a huge hassle.
It's the same thing in Europe too.
Yeah.
The bureaucracy is crazy.
as Americans, we are very, very spoiled.
Yes.
When it comes to the ease of opening up a bank account, yeah, starting because a corporation.
We want shit to happen like this.
Now. We do.
Yeah. And in other countries, it's like mañana. You know,
exactly.
Come back and you fill out this form. Oh, no. You need this signature. Yeah. Oh, no. Come back tomorrow.
And then there's somebody else there and they want something different.
Right.
But on the flip side of that, if you ever need to get things done here and you know the right people, it gets done. Things get done. Oh, we'll just do this little shirk here and a wooga wooga here. And suddenly you have your title to your home that you wouldn't have gotten for 2 years.
It's who you know.
Yeah.
The saving grace here is that any Mexican that you have to deal with at the bank or at the government or anywhere they are super, super nice and super, super helpful. I've never, in the U.S., you can get like a nasty clerk at any time. I've never experienced that here. They're always super friendly, super polite, and love to help. So that's.
Even when they don't have the answer, they'll give you one.
Right.
They'll give you an answer even if they don't have one.
So guys, Mexicans hate to tell you they can't do something. So they will tell you, oh, no problem. We'll make that happen. And then
it doesn't
happen. Oh, they can't really do that.
Besides, that's actually against the law.
Besides the bureaucracy, is there any other cons that you can think of off the top of your head?
Of living here?
Yeah.
Oh, not really. I mean, the language it's not a negative, but it's something to think about. The more Spanish you speak, the more fun you're going to have here.
Right.
That the bureaucracy is a nightmare. Traffic in Mexico City is just ungodly. It's unbelievable bad. But I don't drive, so it's not that big a problem.
So you're fine.
Yeah. But life here is the thing about Mexico that always it continues to amaze me every single day is how nice Mexicans are. They are so, so nice. Like any interaction you have with any person in any situation, they're going to be super polite, super helpful, super nice. I just can't emphasize that enough. In America, Americans, they want everything instantly. They're kind of demanding. There's a lot of anxiety that goes along with everything. Now. Yeah. Mexicans are very chilled out, and they're like, we'll get it done, and when it gets done, it will be done. Like, chill out and don't worry about it.
Yeah.
It also differs because I lived in other parts of the country. So it does differ where you are. I would compare Mexico City to be more like living in New York.
Right.
In the sense that it is very fast paced. It is cosmopolitan. Things do get done here, despite John's frustrations. Things do get done here much faster than they do when I lived in Puerto Vallarta 25 years ago. Exactly. So there's regional differences, but I would tend to agree with John. I've never where you're going to get more of a New Yorker vibe, like especially our Mexico City friends. They're much more direct, and they're much more like that, right? They have expectations that are different than someone that lives in Oaxaca or someone that lives in Merida, right? There's a different speed and pace to life and different priorities. Sure. I would just add to what John was saying that for me, the thing that I love about living here, I'm 53. I've lived out of the U.S. for, I think, 27 years in total, last time I counted, which who knows when that was. But the priorities in Mexico are more about friends and family and hanging out. When you go to lunch on a Saturday here, lunch starts at 2, and you could be sitting in the restaurant at 7 p.m. Comida is like, it's an event. Like you see family, there's
out.
No rush. No, there's no, absolutely not. There's absolutely no rush. And you'll sit there and drink beautiful wines and have beautiful food and converse with your family and friends. And that is what life is more, that's what all the work, the hard work that people do is to create and enrich that experience.
I love it.
And I think the U.S. has lost that in many ways, in many parts of the country, in the majority of the country. The culture has changed in the U.S. And whenever I go back, I'm like, oh, God, what is that? Like, I don't want, no, I want to, let's have a three-hour lunch. Like, get used to it.
It seems to me that Mexicans work to live and Americans live to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that kind of sums it all up.
Yeah. Yep. So guys, in wrapping up, what would you say to our audience if they're thinking about relocating to Mexico City?
Do it.
Do it. You will not regret if you move to Mexico. I can guarantee. So we're on all these like blogs and like Facebook groups and stuff. We follow people, and I've chatted with hundreds of people on those things, and I have never once heard someone say, "Oh, I hate Mexico. I'm going to move back." I've never heard that from anyone.
I've not heard that in Mexico City. I had heard that when I lived in Vallarta. There would be people that had a certain expectation of what life was going to be like. They would transport their entire Canadian or American world down to Vallarta, and they're like, "Well, this isn't what I expected."
Right.
So I would say my recommendation, this is living after living in as many countries as I have, my recommendation is if you're planning on purchasing a home, wait at least a year. Live in the neighborhood, or if you can, like, do long-term Airbnbs and check out different neighborhoods. That's a great way to do it in Mexico City. In San Miguel or places like that, you don't need to as much because you can kind of get a sense much quicker. But this is a really big city with very diverse neighborhoods that have very different vibes, and you want to be in the right vibe. So that's one thing I would say is a cautionary tale, just to be cautious of when you're moving into those places. And it's going to be different. Every country you live in, I've lived all over the world, and every country I live in, you don't really know where you're living for at least 2 years. The first year, you're just getting you're a toddler, right? The second year, you're kind of a teenager and you're figuring stuff out. And then on your third year, that's when you're really ingrained into the society and you have good friends and like all of that. So I would say anyone that's considering moving anywhere, commit to 2 years.
Yep.
If after 2 years you don't like it, then go home. If you do like it, you're going to know probably at about a year anyway.
Right.
But really, after 2 years, you're going to really get a sense of the city.
The other thing I would add is that if somebody's thinking about moving down here, what they should really do is rent an Airbnb for 1 month or 2 months and come down here and like pretend you
really
live here and see if you really, really like it.
Yep.
And the other thing I would tell Americans is your understanding of what Mexico is like that you've gotten from news media is completely wrong. It's 100% wrong. Don't trust that. You've got to come here and experience it and see what it's like, because it's paradise.
Great. Well, thank you, guys. Is there anywhere that we could find you on social media? At all?
You can find me. My Instagram is at ZachLiving360. That's the best place to follow me. And John, do you even know yours?
No.
That's okay.
I can look it up real fast here.
that's fine. We'll get John through you.
All right, good. Sounds good.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, gentlemen, for...
Oh, this was fun. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for coming. I really enjoyed this. And
great.
It gave me a new perspective on Mexico City. I was wanting to hear about Mexico City, and you told it all.
You got it all.
And I'm serious. We have a big guest bedroom, and we love to host people. And if you want to come down and visit Mexico City, you are welcome to stay with us.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. Well,
good.
Thanks, guys. And
thank you.
Yeah.
And we won't hang up.
I hope your husband is better soon.
Okay. Thank you so much. I do appreciate that. And we'll talk soon, guys.
Thanks. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to our podcast and consider making a donation by clicking the coffee cup on any page at www.wheredogaysretire.com. Each cup of coffee that you buy costs $5 and goes towards helping us continue the podcast. Thank you for your continued support.